The TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member at tntradio.live. This is Jesse Zerowell and Perspective on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome to Perspective. I'm Jesse Zerowell, your host for the hour. Before I introduce my guest, just a quick PSA. The 11th of April this year marks the four-year anniversary of the arrest of journalist and publisher Julian Assange. On that day, activists and supporters from around the country will be gathering in front of the Justice Department in Washington, D.C., at the corner of 10th and Pennsylvania from 4 to 6 p.m. to demand the charges against Assange be dropped. This is an event that is organized by my TNT colleague, Misty Winston. And what is happening to Julian Assange? What has happened to him for not just 4 years, but well over a decade now, is something that is happening to all of us. And it's the criminalization of our freedom to tell the truth, the criminalization of truth, truth telling. The world is watching. The tide is turning. Journalism, we must always remember, is not a crime. That said, it's Thursday, so Debbie Evans is back with me. Debbie is a retired NHS nurse, a former advisor to the UK's Department of Health, and currently nursing correspondent for UK Column News, where she publishes a weekly blog. Debbie, how are you?
Good. Well, I say good evening. It is good evening here in the UK. We've moved an hour forward, so it's now just after 7 p.m. in the UK. And we're still disunited, Jesse. How are you in the good old US of A?
Well, it's getting on mid-afternoon here. It's cold and windy, but par for the course for March. And I would say I'm in the disunited states.
It really is like that, isn't it now? I mean, every week when we sign off after we've spoken for an hour and we've put the worlds to rights, you know, and I think, what is it going to be next week? And there's always something new on the horizon, always something to frighten us. And I was just talking about this, actually, about how the news has become monopolized for fear. You know, it's like clickbait for fear. There's never any good news. No one's broadcasting good news. And for alternative media broadcasters like TNT and for UK Column, we always try to splash a bit of good news in. And I think, you know, to start on a positive note here, and we started on a positive note last week when we were talking about, you know, how members of the public, like Cheryl Granger, for example, can get themselves in front of those in power at the MHRA. And we're seeing it again this week in the UK, particularly around 15-minute cities and 20-minute neighbourhoods. And many, many people are attending council meetings, Thetford in Norfolk, Colchester, Glastonbury. There are council meetings taking place all around the country, and people are holding the councillors to account and really starting to rise up and do some amazing good. And what's so amazing about many of these meetings is that the people that are going in and challenging the councillors on what is going to happen in our area, you know, are you planning on doing this in our area? They're so well researched. They're so measured when they're asking questions, and they're so calm, and they're really making progress. So I'm buoyed up by the fact that there are positive stories out there, and there is some really amazing work going on out there. And I just worry that sometimes we get so deluged with bad news and doom and gloom that we forget the good bits of news that are out there. So I really see a rising up. I see dissenting, much more dissenting within the public everywhere. So I'm feeling positive on that note, for sure. And I think it's going to happen in every country. You know, we've got France, they're rising up. We've had Israel rising up, pretty much Netherlands. I mean, there are so many countries that are now rising up. But of course, the mainstream media don't want us to know that, do they, Jesse? It's only from TNT and other outlets like UK Column and other alternative media that you'll ever hear really what's going on in the world at the moment. That's how I'm seeing it.
Yes, I see it that way too. And I agree with you with regard to the positivity in terms of watching people, seeing people rise up from the council level, as is happening in the UK, to the national level, as is happening in, for example, France right now. There's a lot of negative to be seen in what's happening in France, for instance, right now, in terms of people being brutally beaten, assaulted by militarized goons who are supposed to be police, but, and I suppose are acting as police usually do, but it's despicable behavior, and it backs up a man who is a pure globalist puppet, Macron, and his statement earlier this week or late last week that essentially, I don't care what you're saying as a French citizen, I'm going to do this and I'm going to ram it through without a parliamentary vote because this is what my masters have told me to do. And meanwhile, I'm going to sick my goons on you to beat you hideously in the street. That's a negative aspect, I would say. But if there's a positive to be derived from it, it's that the French people in this case are not taking it. They're not backing down. And that's, we should take that, all of us, as an example of how to resist, one of many ways to resist.
I think that's what's so important, you know, Jesse, and I'm sure you get emails from people as well. And I know that we do at UK Column, and people say, what can we do? You know, we're just one person. But, you know, the little tiny things are the things that count. You know, we've got nurses like Jenna Platt walking from one end of the country to the other, talking to people, just talking to people. We've got other people going to their town councils. In the UK, we have a system where we have, within our own area and where we live, we have a town council, and then the town council reports to the county council. So counties in the UK are a bit like states in the USA. So we have the three levels of parliament. We have very local, which is town council, and then central county, which is county councillors, and then we have parliamentary councillors. So, you know, anybody, if you're living down a street and you're thinking, what can I do? You can go to your council meeting, go to your local town council meeting, find out who your local town councillor is, find out who your local representative, whichever country you're in. Go and knock on their door or ring their bell or give them a ring on the phone and say to them that you would like to attend a town council or a council meeting and ask the questions. And I think so many people now are so well researched that when they go to these meetings, they're armed with the details. And these councillors generally don't really know what they're, you know, the people that are asking the questions know all the answers pretty much. Mm-hmm. And the councillors don't. It's very powerful. It's really powerful, you know, just by handing out leaflets, talking to people, just talking to people, attending, you know, online Zooms and online board meetings to see what's going on, to allow, to let them know, to let those in control or those who like to think they're in control know that we, the public, we're not stupid. They think we're stupid. We're not stupid, far from stupid. I mean, your audience and our audience, incredibly well researched, incredibly well switched on, and doing an awful lot in the background. And I think this is what we need to be focusing on, is the good that's being done in the background, because we don't hear enough of it. And I think it really instills confidence. And I get so many emails from people telling me about the amazing things that they're doing in their local areas. So there is a big movement. It's just that maybe we can't all see it as yet.
It's absolutely out there, and it's out there in innumerable ways. So here's one example. I have a colleague, his name is Alex Zeck, and he's done excellent work in terms of exposing the fraud of virology, still does excellent work on that. But he has a platform which he started and heads along with others called The Way Forward. And in his interviews, in his gatherings that he arranges, well, his organization's gatherings that are arranged, it's not just a constant focus on the fact that viruses have never been proven to exist and virology is a pseudoscience that's become essentially a weapon of the state used against us. Yes, he does get into that, but he's also very solutions focused, and solutions focused particularly in teaching people how to take control of their health themselves and offering possible ways they can do that. And he's just a machine. And I mean this in a good way when it comes to that. He's relentless, and he catches a lot of flack, as a lot of us in alternative media and alternative spheres do, but he doesn't let it wear him down. He knows what's true and sticks to that. But again, he doesn't just focus on, well, look what this group of people who are promulgating this fraud are doing. He goes beyond that and says, yes, that's a problem, but here are solutions to it. Here's how you can empower yourself. And he's not the only one doing that. There are so many people doing that. And I think it's so important to not just recognize, but engage with that however we can, however we feel that fits into how we're trying to live our lives in general, and also resist and throw off those who are trying to control our lives from every single angle.
Yeah, I completely agree. I kind of, I've shortened it to, I call it B2B, B and then the number two and B, back to basics, because, you know, everybody's telling us, well, at least that's what we're hearing in the UK, is we have to take responsibility for our own selves. We have to take responsibility for our own health. But for me, yes, absolutely, we need to take responsibility for our own health. But actually, what we need to do is just listen to our own selves, look at our own selves, instead of relying on AI, gadgets, gizmos, apps, and everything else to tell us how we are. Because, you know, we know how we are. If we're walking and talking, and we're breathing, and we're a fairly good color, and we feel okay, the odds on that we are okay. And yet we're being told now that we could be suffering from an asymptomatic disease. What? Asymptomatic disease? This is insanity, complete insanity. And I had the great privilege of talking to Dr. Thomas Binder last night, who reminded me about differential diagnosis, which is basically when physicians have different opinions on diagnoses. And I was listening to the amazing work that he's done, and he said the same to me. The world has gone completely bonkers. You know, since when are they testing? Are we testing healthy people? People are being made to think that they're ill. Oh, well, let's check to make sure you won't be ill in 6 months' time or a year's time. Healthy people don't need testing. We don't need to rely on artificial intelligence. And we know already from the last couple of days that people are starting to get a bit worried about AI. Have we gone too far with AI? Are we worried about AI? Well, only yesterday on UK Column, I'd never heard of it before, Society 5.0, which is being rolled out in Japan, which is a merge of cyber, physical, humans, basically transhumanism dressed up in a new term called Society 5.0. We really, you know, and I was also surprised to learn that only 44% apparently of the planet is attached to the internet. So it's not going to work for over 50% of the planet anyway that aren't attached to the internet and can't facilitate this AI that they're rolling out. But we need to take responsibility for our own health by just not looking in a black mirror, but just looking in an ordinary mirror. And if we're being made, to expect to be ill when we're not ill. And asymptomatic diseases, in my opinion, don't exist. This is all a complete myth. So, yes, we need to take responsibility for ourselves, but on the same tack, we don't need to rely, I don't think, I'm absolutely sure I'm dreading it, this AI that's coming in as a nurse. You know, we wouldn't rely on machines to tell us how a patient was. We would talk to the patient. We would hold their hand. We would check to see how warm they were. We would observe their self. You know, you'd know. You don't need gadgets and gizmos. So AI for me is going in completely the wrong way. And I think only now in the last couple of days, we're starting to see headlines, aren't we, saying that AI perhaps has gone too far. So watch this space. But Society 5.0 is being rolled out pretty much everywhere. I wasn't surprised to see a Society 5.0 Institute in London. So I'm sure there's a Society 5.0 Institute in the USA and Australia and any other country. And as well as that, I discovered that while we've been talking about the fourth industrial revolution, actually, they're already winding up the fifth industrial revolution. So, you know, we're heading for the merge of fourth and fifth industrial revolutions into this brave new world. So, yeah, there's been a lot going on, Jesse, a lot going on for sure.
Yes. And in terms of the fourth industrial revolution and the fifth industrial revolution, as they're called, on one level, we can and should laugh at these concepts because much of them are based on delusion and assumptions that will never materialize. And largely that will be because people will be aware, are aware of what's embedded in those assumptions and the implications of them and want nothing to do with it. But on the other hand, we need to take it seriously because the people pushing these agendas are so deluded that they are serious about pushing them and think that they can make them materialize, that they can bend humanity and nature in all their complexity to the will of these agendas. They can't, but they will do anything, as we've seen over the last 3 years now. They will do anything to try to make that reality, and they're not going to stop. This is their lifeblood, so to speak. So going back to fear, as you were talking about, and positivity, we shouldn't be afraid of these people and what they're trying to do. They want us to be afraid, and they know that, as we all do, that fear makes us sick. physically, psychologically. It paralyzes us. It stops us from thinking properly. So they want us to be afraid, but we shouldn't be afraid. And we should realize that so much of what they're proposing to do is based on delusion. It's based on insanity. It's psychopathic. It's sociopathic. But we should, again, also take it seriously, not as something that's going to be materialized, but as something that they're going to do everything within their power to try to make it a reality. And that's where we should always be on the watch and always be ready to resist, to say no, because they are convinced that this is the future, that it's inevitable, and that every human, every animal, every plant, everything in nature should be bent to their will. And again, they're not going to stop at anything to make that manifest. Even though I think they know as well that it's an impossible task, but they don't care for a lot of reasons.
They've bought into it. I mean, these people, I mean, this fifth industrial revolution, for example, I mean, this is the brainchild of Pratik Gauri. His name is Pratik Gauri. And he's nobody. And when you look at him, he's done plenty of TED Talks. He's a WEF global, young global leader or world shaper. And he was trained by Al Gore, which pretty much tells you everything you need to know. But when you go and look at him doing his TED Talks, he looks really awkward. He looked like he's pitching for some sort of inexperienced job, you know. He very, very unsure of himself. And through all of this, through a whole this agenda, I found people that were in places of power who were describing themselves. I mean, I don't know if you can help me out or if any of your listeners can help me out here, but I mean, people are describing themselves as thought leaders. What is a thought leader? What is a global icon, a visionary? And what is a spiritual seeker and compelling speaker? You know, who makes up these? This is, and I'm actually referring directly to, because through all of this generation, Society 5.0, I found the Women Economic Forum, WEF. And I didn't even realize there was a Women Economic Forum. And the funder, who's called Dr. Harbin Arora, what a coincidence, Arora Rai, and this Pratik Gauri, these people are describing themselves as champions of thought and innovative leaders and global icons, and yet they don't have any experience, hardly, because most of them are very young, hence the young global leaders from the WEF. They have no experience, but huge amounts of power. And it seems that they've, to put it bluntly, it's almost like they've sold their souls and they've bought into, right, if you do what we tell you to do and you push this narrative, we will reward you. So they're trapped. They're now trapped in these high places and there's nowhere for them to go. So, you know, most of the people underneath the radar, if you like, or people that we don't necessarily see, like our well-known politicians, that are being recruited into universities and accelerated to high places within certain organizations like the WEF, the WHO, the United Nations. These people don't have qualifications. They're, in my opinion, they're all frauds. They've been groomed from a very early age. They've been groomed to know no better. So they're not going to stop until they are stopped, and they will be stopped. You know, I do believe that the WEF, the United Nations, the WHO, all of it will collapse eventually. And it's not going to be that long. All of it will collapse. But the people that are running these organizations and coming up with these crazy ideas, who are they? Where have they come from? Do you know who they are? And I don't think anybody does. And yet they yield such immense power. But again, I think, like you've just said, with regards to fear, we mustn't be fearful. If we have faith, and faith in whatever you have faith in, for me, it's God, and I'm a Christian. For other people, they have faith in other things. But I think if you have faith, that's the antidote to fear. And if we know what's going on, we need to know what's going on. You're right. We need to keep our eyes on the ball, because they're very clever at distraction. And, you know, all week here in the UK, we've been hearing about Gwyneth Paltrow and her skiing accident, when there's so much other things that are going on underneath that we're not being told. So we do have to keep our eyes on the ball, but we shouldn't be frightened, because we've got nothing to be frightened of. Good people don't have anything to be frightened of, because none of us have done anything wrong. None of us. And I think we lose that sometimes, and we start to blame other people and blame each other. None of us have done anything wrong. We've been scammed. And now what we have to do is to be strong and positive, polite, well-researched and measured, and fight back. And I really do believe that there's more of us than there are of them.
Yes, there are. And I would add to that, that we also need to call each other out when it's necessary, and not avoid doing so just because we want to be nice or be diplomatic. If we see or hear a colleague or a comrade or a friend, what have you, promoting something in whatever way we disagree with or that is objectively wrong, we should point that out. But there are ways to do that without devolving into chaotic conflict. And we need to be able to do that with one another. And it's a big problem I've been seeing increase, especially in what's sometimes referred to as the health freedom movement. There are people like myself who are being called divisive and distracting for pointing to the fraud of virology as the spearhead of what's been done to us over the last 3 years, and something that we need to devote more attention to and discuss more. And for me, and I can say for all of the colleagues I've gotten to know who are of the same mind based on research, based on evidence, this is not about converting people or changing their beliefs. This is about having the discussions we need to have so we can resist properly, and saying, hey, I understand that you're focused on this gain of function stuff that's going on in the news, as an example. But when you look at that in this light, and this light, and this light, this is a psyop. This is a distraction. Here's how it perpetuates what we're trying to resist. And let's talk about that, and let's get past this. And I don't care if you still believe that viruses exist and make people sick, but we have to see this fundamental problem here. And within, again, this so-called health freedom movement, there's a lot of unwillingness on the part of certain actors to do that. And instead of engaging in honest dialogue, they call, and I'm not complaining here, this doesn't bother me personally, I'm just saying, instead of engaging people like myself and people who have been at this much longer than I have, are being called possibly controlled opposition by people like Peter McCullough. And it's getting ridiculous. Why not just engage with the discussion and acknowledge that we have to call each other out from time to time, call each other on our crap from time to time. And it goes both ways. And
I can give you an example of that.
I think I'll leave it at that. But yes, I'd like to hear your example.
Well, when you said, you know, we have to call people out, you're absolutely right. And I was probably guilty at the beginning of maybe calling people out in a way that perhaps turned them off because of passion, not because of any other reason, but perhaps sometimes I came over a little bit too strong on something like the injection, something like talking about the existence of viruses. And only yesterday, it surprised me, because only yesterday I went to my corner shop and the lady in there I know quite well, and she's fully vaccinated and was very much following the government's narrative and wouldn't hear a word said against. So I've been quite careful about, you know, what I've said in front of her. But yesterday I went in to pick up a newspaper because on the front of the Express, it was all about the NHS. And I thought, that's great. I need to pick that one up. But in the corner, there was a story about gender reassignment. And I looked at her and I just can't get over this. This is so bad. And she was really offended. And she said, why have you got a thing against trans people? I said, absolutely not. One of my friends is trans, has gone from male to female. And actually, she says that the one thing that she wants to do is just to blend in. She doesn't want to be highlighted. She doesn't want to be spotted or pointed out or, you know, made to feel different. She just wants to blend in. And I said, you know, to her, I've got a 3-year-old grandson. And yet, according to some of the curriculums in nursery schools, you know, they're teaching children about the gender differences and boys can become girls and girls can become boys at three. Mm-hmm. And she immediately paused there and I could see the penny starting to drop, because when you hit a subject like that, that's quite evocative and emotive, especially to any women, no woman, I don't believe in my right mind, would actually agree to a 3-year-old being taught about gender bias and gender differences and almost sexualization education at three. And of course, it really did hit a nerve with her. And we started to engage and talk about it, because I said, you can't agree with that, surely. And she said, no, I absolutely don't. And I said, it's terrible, isn't it, when you think about it? How would you feel if it was your grandchild? And she said, I would feel exactly the same as you. And all of a sudden, we had a common bond. And this was somebody that I have really been careful in the last couple of years what I say to in front of, because she gets very offended and very defensive if you say anything against the government narrative. But here we shared a common bond. And then I very gently said, there's been so many things that have happened in the last 2 or 3 years that have been so wrong. And she looked at me and I felt the empathy. I felt the connection. So yes, I called her out, but I called her out in a way that kind of appealed to her maternal side, to her feminine side. I mean, I haven't tried it with a man yet. I just tried it. It was just an example that happened yesterday. But absolutely, calling people out, but in a gentle way, in a reasonable way. And I think also choosing your topic. So if they're hell-bent on the injection and they're still hell-bent on it, maybe take a different topic that they can identify with that will suddenly trigger them to think, well, no, that's not right. So what else is not right in the world? And sometimes that's just that little doorway that you need just to reconnect with people that you might have disconnected with. And it is a good conversation starter. You know, it's a good icebreaker if you can just very reasonably say, you know, and empathize with people's situations and how have we got to this? Because the minute you ask them a question, they look at you and they're almost agreeing with you before you've said anything, because everyone's feeling it at the moment. So I think now is the time we can go in gently and definitely have those conversations. Definitely engage. You can't lose by talking to someone very gently. And I was in the fish and chip shop. Here's another example. I was in the fish and chip shop the other day, and I know the guy that runs it really, really well. And I made my order for chips. And I said to him very quietly, I said, by the way, you might just maybe want to think about getting some cash out of the bank. And he wanted to know more. And we engaged and we spoke. And then I looked out of the window because it was a beautiful day, blue sky. I looked out of the window and I saw a load of chemtrails, and I pointed at them. And he said, cool, there's been a lot of aeroplanes today. I said, those aren't aeroplanes. But because we'd already found a common bond with something, he was much more receptive to learning. And then within 2 minutes, there he is on his phone, paging in chemtrails and learning more about them. And we did it in a very innocent, gentle, almost spontaneous way. And I think that's the way to go. Well, that's the way I'm finding successful. So perhaps if other people can find their own ways to engage, then absolutely, it's got to be a good thing.
Yes, I fully agree. And the approach we take is so important, because we are passionate about, we each have our specific things that we're passionate about. And I'm not going to make a hierarchy here. And I don't know if that's even possible anyway, of what's more important than something else. But when it comes to interacting with people, wherever they're at, I hate using this term, but for lack of a better term, wherever they're at in terms of being awake, we have to navigate that, not carefully so that we don't upset people, but in a way that is productive, that yes, helps us find common ground, but also helps us progress in the conversation that we're having. Like the two examples you just cited, I think are excellent examples of that. You could have gone into a full tirade of an endless litany of things that have gone wrong and have been made to go wrong over the past 3 years, but you're going to overwhelms whatever the truth of that approach, whatever the truth of that material you may have presented in such a tirade is, it's overwhelming for a lot of people. And we have to remember too that all of us, I'm speaking for myself, but I think this extends to all of us, even those of us who are quote unquote awake, have been traumatized over especially the past 3 years, physically, psychologically, and some of us are further along in assessing and dealing with and figuring out that trauma than others. And we have to remember that when interacting with everybody, that they're at different points. And some people are just not there and they're just not going to get there. And we have to realize that too and walk away from those people, unfortunately. And I say unfortunately because it's, in a sense, it's like giving up on somebody. But some people just will not go there ever. And we have to realize when that's the case and say to ourselves, we can't spend time and energy pushing on this wall that is never going to come down. And I have family members who are like that. And it's gotten to the point where I can't talk to them about anything. I don't talk to them because we've had conversations where I've brought up things and they just get to the point where they're irate because of whatever reasons they get so irate that they can't even explain themselves anymore. And I just say, to hell with this. I can't I don't want to convert anybody anyway, but this is just a time and energy drain. And unfortunately, I have to let this person I still love, I have to let them go. And maybe they'll figure it out, figure things out themselves. Maybe not, but I tried and I have to move on. We have to be able to do that too. And a lot of people have been saying this and are aware of this and are doing this, but I don't think it can be emphasized enough.
I completely agree, because I think, you know, you drain yourself and you get yourself stressed. And the way I see it, and I often think in pictures, and so I often talk in pictures. And as an analogy, I used to be a theatre nurse. Now, I would never dream of asking a patient that was under general anaesthetic, a full gen, maybe having had cardiac surgery or in the middle of cardiac surgery, that was under general anaesthetic, I would never in a million years ask the patient how they were feeling, because they're unconscious, completely unconscious. Mm. However, somebody that's gone into hospital and maybe had a procedure under sedation isn't unconscious. So you can still ask that person, are you okay? They might not remember telling you that they're okay or they're not okay, but you can communicate with that person. And then you've got the ones that are waking up from their operation completely, completely wide awake and back to consciousness. And I see people now as, if I see someone out, a friend of mine perhaps, with a mask on, I know that that person is unconscious under a general anaesthetic, has been taken under such a deep spell that there is no point in me wasting any of my energy or getting them upset by trying to engage in any part of the narrative. But people that are semi-conscious, those are the ones that are really important. Hugely. They're, I think, a third possibly of the population. I see it as a third, you know, wide awake, or as we call awake. And then a third who aren't quite sure, but know something's wrong, but not quite sure what. And then a third that are just carrying on following the government narrative. And that middle third is really important, because dependent on how we speak to that person and what we say to them, we can either switch them off or switch them on. And if we can switch them on, and then they can start to see things for themselves and do their own research, then that's incredible. And I think the message for me is kindness. And sometimes when people are passionate, it can come over a bit too much. And I'm guilty of it myself with my own family. You know, they feel overwhelmed when I'm around. They can feel exhausted because the conversation will somehow get on to something that will cause some friction. So I'm like you. So there are members of my family now that I don't speak to at all, not because I don't love them, but because it just leads to anxiety for both parties. But mm-hmm. I think if we can just try to distinguish who we can use our energy on, because we have positive energy, but we hurt too. You know, there are times that we need to be rebooted and we need some energy from people as well. And I think, you know, for people like yourself, Jesse, who have had the injection, who are vaccine injured, who are also now on their ladder of knowledge and are seeing what's going on. Everyone's at a different stage. No one can take anyone for granted. You know, the person that you're speaking to may appear to be awake of all of the narrative, but might not be. So we're all at different levels, and we just have to respect one another and be kind to one another and gentle, because I think that's the only way forward, because that's the example of the people that we are. You know, we're truth seekers. We don't want to cause anybody any alarm. I certainly don't want to be shouting fire in crowded rooms, but at the same time, if I can make a connection with somebody, then, you know, it's a bonus. But like I say, there are more of us than there are of them, and I'm positive and I'm buoyed up by the amount of people that are incredibly kind out there. I mean, there are some amazing people out there doing great things with enormous doses of kindness. We don't see that. We see so much cruelty going on, and we see so much poverty and anxiety and stress in the world. We must remember that there are an awful lot of people out there, the majority out there, that are kind, beautiful souls who would do anything to help us, and likewise us for them, and that there's plenty of us. So my big message, I think my big takeout, is just be kind, be gentle. And the old nursing mantra, I guess, tender, loving care. Whatever happened to that, Jesse? Where did it go?
Mm. Yes, that's such
rocket science. It's really not rocket science, is it? I mean, it's free, for goodness sake. Tender, loving care and kindness and holding a hand is free. And you know what? There are no distribution problems with kindness. It's there all the time, in boundless. I mean, just never, ever runs out. So it really isn't rocket science. It's just love and kindness, generosity of spirit, and for people to be the best person they can be. And I think to put your head on the pillow at night and know that you've done your best, because that's all you can do at the end of the day, isn't it? Just your best.
Yes, absolutely. And again, I want to emphasize this because I think it's important that we don't come across as people who are trying to convert other people, right? We're not interested in that. What we're interested in doing is standing in alliance with our fellow human beings and simply saying to some who might not be aware of certain things that are a danger to all of us, hey, take a look at this, because this isn't just something that's affecting me. This is affecting the whole world, like what's being done with chemtrails and weather modification, for example. It's yesterday started out, the sky was crystal clear, blue, nothing in sight. By mid-afternoon, it was just a mess of what we're told are contrails, but we know what they really are. And then the haze started, the sun started to fade behind the haze. And I woke up today with all kinds of sinus agitation, and I can't say for sure that absolutely was because of what was done directly overhead yesterday where I live, and probably spread a lot farther than that. But it's something we need to point at to other people and say, look, that's not right. This is something that's not just affecting me because I feel this way and there may be a connection. It's affecting you too, and it's affecting your children too. So let's look into this together. Let's talk about this. And if some people don't want to go there, then they don't want to go there. And that's for them to decide. But I think many more people than not do want to go there and want to empower themselves rather than relying on doctors and bureaucrats and technocrats and other maniacs in power to tell them how to live, essentially, what is healthy for them and how far they can drive. And eventually, if they get their way, what we can buy and what we can't buy and when we can buy it and when we can't buy it and on and on. So it all comes down to a balancing act. I think too that it's important to retain our sense of urgency, because those who want to destroy us are working around the clock to do so. And as I said before, we'll stop at nothing, even if they know that their plans are doomed to fail. So we shouldn't shy away from being urgent in our communications either, but there's a difference between communicating urgency and being emphatic to the point of saying, no, you have to believe in this. You have to believe in this right now. I don't think that that's the approach. I don't think anybody who's really thinking and acting in the ways that we're talking about thinks that's the right approach, but it's easy for all of us to fall into that trap, and we have to be ever vigilant of it.
We're not trying to convert any. I don't like the word conversion anyway, because it conjures up a number of things. So I think it's kind of got a taint to it now, the word conversion. But conversion conjures up cult as well, and that's certainly not what we are or who we are. I think it's more about restoring people's common sense. They've been brainwashed. They've been put under a spell, if you like. And I think it's about restoring people's common sense and their love for humanity. So definitely not converting anybody. But I think, you know, this false altruism that people have been having to show, banging your pot outside your front door for the NHS, making sure you have your PCR, making sure you do everything that the government are doing. This controlled altruism has now become normalized with so many people. And giving people permission to talk about things and to debate things that is common sense, I think, mm-hmm. is so important. So, yeah, just restoring people's basic fundamental common sense. I said to a lady the other day, I said, do you know, when you think back 3 years, can you believe that people were walking into pubs with masks on, sitting down, taking the mask off? The minute they stood up, they had to put the mask back on again, sit down, take it off. So can you really believe that we were doing that, and that we really believed that a little bit of plastic was going to stop an absolutely horrific, in inverted commas, virus? I mean, really? And people are actually agreeing now. They're looking back and they're thinking, this was insane. This was ridiculous. And people that have lost loved ones are now being told that it should never have happened. Now they're getting really upset and angry. So mm-hmm. I think the tide is definitely turning, but this fake altruism, and that all the authorities are talking about, the MHRA talk about, you know, all the public's altruism has been immense, we must promote altruism. It's all behavioral psyop. We just need to very gently give people the rights and permission and remind them of what good old-fashioned common sense is. Because at the end of the day, when I was a kid, you know, if I had a cold or a sniffle or something, and we were going to go and visit an aunt or a great granny on a Sunday, if I wasn't very well, I wouldn't go, because my mum would say to me, no, because your great grandmother's, you know, 92, and it's not fair on her to have a cold. So I wouldn't go. Common sense. All of a sudden, common sense went out of the window. So I think just to highlight to people that, you know, what were we doing, or what was the globe thinking of 3 years ago? And people are now realizing, and the penny's dropping. So it's a gentle drip drip, but I agree, we need to do it with urgency. But we still don't need to be abrasive just because it's urgent. We can still be gentle, or as gentle as we can be, and then be there when things do happen, and we're there for other people to support them. So that's all we can do, Jesse, isn't it? Again, you know, it just comes down to being the best person you can and doing your best.
Mm-hmm. And sticking to and not being willing to compromise on what you know is true, but also being willing and able to change your mind when evidence contradicts or cancels out what you thought you knew. to be true. I think that's important too. And we have to stand our ground with what we know to be true. And if somebody presents something to us that shatters that, well, then we have to be able to change our minds and rethink how we've been thinking. And there's so much more we could get into with this discussion, but I'm glad we had it, because these are important interactions and strategies of interactions that we have to practice and we have to continually hone. So thank you for helping me do that today, Debbie. Much appreciated. And I look forward to speaking with you again next week.
My pleasure, Jesse. And stay strong, everyone. Keep the faith and God bless. Night night from the UK.
And that's it for me, everybody. I'll be back at the same time tomorrow. Stay tuned for Joe Hoft up next here on TNT Radio.